The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius, Meditations, Book 7, Chapter 56. Imagine you were now dead, or had not lived before this moment. Now, view the rest of your life as a bonus, and live it as nature directs. So usually when I engage in an experiment, I wait for at least 2 weeks before I step back and reflect or report on the results. I started an experiment last week, which is the counting the weeks of my life, which I made an episode about last Wednesday. And so even though it's only been 1 week, I felt compelled to report on the results of what it's been like a week in. And I forgot if I mentioned this on the actual episode, but I posted the calendar right in front of where I daven when I daven at home, which is, allows me to have it not just in peripheral view, but like literally right in front of me when I'm davening. So the effect, as many of these experiments are, the effect was very unpredictable, right? So I thought that the effect would be a straight up memento mori experience or perspective, remembering my mortality and realizing that I only have that I could die at any moment. And obviously that's going to be a big part of what we talk about. But I think my experience is much closer to what Marcus Aurelius described here of viewing the rest of my life as a bonus. And the reason why is because when I see, the way that the chart is set up, and I'll attach a link to the photo again, is, you buy a chart like this and you can pick how late, I guess, how many years you want on the chart. And I picked 88 years because I thought that was a pretty good estimate of based on average lifespans, based on my family's history, it's reasonable to assume that 88 years, barring any unforeseen circumstances, 88 years could be a good estimation. So I'm seeing on this chart all of the X's that have been marking off all of the weeks up through my soon to be 38 years, and then I see all this space from year 39 through 88, essentially 50 more years, and I have been thinking about the fact that I can't take those for granted. Obviously I can't take those for granted. I can't take for granted that I will have those years. And I don't know, something about seeing the X marks on the time that I have already been here, in this life on this earth, and seeing it physically juxtaposed next to all this white space where who knows if I'm actually going to have that time. It does allow me to have hodah, to have thanks for the years that I have been granted, and then to view whatever I have now as a bonus. And this is going to be very, very lame, okay? But this is extremely lame. But, the closest analogy I can come up with on a small scale level is like back in the pre-COVID days when we would get our first snow day of the year, and especially when it was a snow day on a Monday, where we've had 2 days of weekend, and then suddenly you find yourself with a bonus day, just a free day. And I say the first snow day because I think we had a rule in Shelhevet, in the school I taught at for 10 years, that on the first snow day of the year, then teachers would be encouraged to to not assign work and to not have to work. So all the other snow days, we really had to work and we had to do remote classes and stuff. But the first snow day was a true bonus. Or there have been several times when I have been scheduled to fly back from Seattle to New York, and then the flight got canceled and I found myself with an extra day or a couple of days in Seattle at home. And there's a certain quality of a feeling of being granted extra time. And that's really what I wanted to focus on here, is that I think the message of memento mori, of remembering that you are going to die, triggers certain feelings that can be associated with fear or anxiety or or even negativity for some people. Again, I don't usually experience that, but I think realizing you're already dead, or taking that perspective, and then viewing each day as a bonus, really is a much more positive and optimistic way of looking at things. And that was what I was shocked about, of having this chart here. Again, you know, I've done a lot of memento mori experiments, and again, you know, the medallion, the mezuzah, the talis, and you know, many others, and you know, this one struck me in a different way, and I thought I wanted to like express that. I actually also thought about two of my favorite depictions of this from fiction. One is from Aaron Sorkin's underrated show, Studio 60, which was only there for one season, and then got canceled. And there is, you know, I wrote a blog post on this on my old blog in 2010. And because I'm not, as they say, holding in Studio 60, I haven't seen it in a long time, I'm going to read my summary of the background for this scene, and then I'll read the dialogue. Okay, so one of my favorite characters on Aaron Sorkin's Studio 60 is Jordan McDear, the newly hired president of the National Broadcasting System. Jordan is a woman who is good at what she does and knows it. She has the courage and confidence not to be pressured into making decisions against her better judgment, but she is honest and humble enough to consider the ideas of her colleagues and to back down when convinced that it is in the best interest of the network. She is a beautiful model of integrity, professionalism, and craftsman's independence. In addition to being a beautiful model, Stom. In episode 9, entitled The Option Period, after taking heat from the higher ups at NBS for her radical decisions and for not caring about tarnishing her reputation in the tabloids, Jordan begins to fear for the future of her career. In a private moment with Danny Tripp, the executive producer on the fictional show Studio 60, Jordan explains the mentality she adopted in order to summon the courage to do what was right for NBS in spite of all the pressure from the expectations of others. Okay, so in other words, just to say that in to summarize that, so Jordan McDear is really in charge, but there are higher ups for this show Studio 60, which is like a Saturday Night Live type show, and then Jordan is explaining to the executive producer Danny how she deals with this courage. Okay, so I would play for the clip, but I'm not going to try to look for it on YouTube right now. So I'm gonna, again, this is awkward because it's a dialogue, so I'll say the names Jordan and Danny before each line. So Jordan: when I took the job, I decided I wanted to pretend that I only had a year to live. Seriously, I mean, what would you do in my job if you only had a year to live and no one knew it? You ever play that game? Danny: no. Jordan: well, if what you're saying is true, Danny, just fix the press. Jordan: then maybe I don't have to pretend anymore. Danny: pretend what? Jordan: that I only have a year to live. I don't have to pretend. Danny: fix the press. Jordan: I would be completely untethered. Danny: you're heading in that direction. Jordan, speaking excitedly: I'd have to get the network pregnant fast. I got to fix a slate of new shows. I'll have to. Some writers or agents are about to have a good week. I'll give them all colossal guarantees so that we can't afford to dumb them down until they've done 13. Danny: listen to me. You're very winning, not to me, but to everyone else. People who have met you like you. It's only the ones who don't know you who have a problem. Go out there and control your own press. Jordan, after a pause: oh man, Danny, would you go around trying to get people to like you? Danny, looking her straight in the eye: no. Jordan closes her eyes and shakes her head as if saying, yeah, that's what I thought. So you know exactly where I'm coming from, and you know that I'm going to totally ignore the press and do what I think is right anyway. Okay, so I remember seeing that on, I know I can't capture a real Aaron Sorkin scene through reading the screenplay like that, but the scene really captures this feeling where she's in this position where there are lots of expectations, and then she has been pretending that, you know, in her job, that she only has a year to live, and what would she do differently? And then now there's this bad press that is out there. I don't even remember the plot line, but where the bad press came from. And she realizes, oh, so like I only do have a year to live, and I'm just going to do what I think is best for the network, and not worry about what people think. And she's confident enough in her own decision making that she knows it'll be good, and people will ultimately come to recognize it. But she knows she can't get that approval or that that validation in real time. She's just going to have to do what she thinks is best for the network, and let people get upset and let her image get tarnished in the press, and then she'll come through. You know, and so I that really really stood out to me then. And again, it's using this mentality of you have been granted this time in the past, and now everything from here on out, you know, you're already dead. Everything from here on out is a bonus. And that recognition allows you to live this free time, this bonus time with, I guess, yeah, it's a good question. What exactly does it allow you to do? I want to give that some more thought, but let me show you or read you one more other example of this. So in the miniseries produced by Steven Spielberg called Band of Brothers, produced by Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, this is in 2001, then there is a character named, again, this is based on real history, Lieutenant Colonel Ronald Spiers. I think it's pronounced Spiers. And he had a reputation as a courageous leader, but was merciless as a soldier. So there's a scene where he's comforting, or sorry, where he meets this other cowardly soldier named Blythe. And Blythe basically confesses that on D-Day, when he parachuted in, he kind of just found a ditch and then hid in it until the fighting died down, and he escaped. And so Blythe confesses this to Spiers, and then Spiers says to him, "Do you know why you hid in that ditch, Blythe?" And Blythe says, "I was scared." So Spiers says, "We're all scared. You hid in that ditch because you think there is still hope. But Blythe, the only hope you have is to accept the fact that you're already dead. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner you'll be able to function as a soldier is supposed to function, without mercy, without compassion, without remorse. All war depends on it." So again, that's that is in the extreme situation of a soldier, where the soldier is actually facing death, and you can see how viewing it as though you're already dead or you are definitely going to die in this war can give you that extra oomph of courage. In fact, that's actually incorporated into halacha now that I'm realizing it. Hold on just one second. I'm just searching for a blog post I wrote. Just one second here. Yeah, let's see. I should have reviewed this. Okay, so this is from an article I wrote on Matos and Masse in 2020 called "Leaving an Out for Your Enemy." Hold on, just one second here. Yeah. You know what? Yeah, I'm just gonna include. I'm not gonna attempt to reread and relearn all of this and then summarize it. I'll just include the link. Just know that this is that example from Band of Brothers is actually reflected in halacha according to some. Okay. Anyway, so let's sum it up here. So when I see this chart of the weeks of my life and I see all of this white space, these unchecked boxes of weeks, and realize that that is not vouchsafed to me and that it is, you know, I have the only thing I actually have is I have had these 38 years that I've been granted, and everything out from here is a bonus. And so I do think, and I'm going to try to live this consciously, and this is part of my making this episode is you know, I am going to try to live this Jordan McDear philosophy, you know, of you know, you're already dead. You know, and why are you going to go around trying to get people to like you? And again, I realized this I think many of us realized this from the pandemic of, you know, I had this job in Shalhevet and taught there for 10 years, felt well entrenched, and then it all just went away when the school closed. And you know, if I think about the, it's hard to remember back to this time, but if I think about the particular types of stresses that I was involved in as a teacher, you know, in the months leading up to the pandemic, and then the pandemic layered on all these other stresses, and then the closure of the school layered on all these other stresses. It makes it look like those original stresses were mundane, you know, and in truth, they were mundane when when the entire existence of the school was on the line, and when we realized that the school wouldn't last. And so, like, I do think that there is a certain type of courage or bravery. Which you can summon up by keeping this perspective in mind. And again, it's not, this is a use of the imagination, or as Epictetus would say, making use of impressions. You know, we are using this, we're getting into this headspace by imagining that you're already dead, but it does have a real effect. And it is based in reality in the sense that this is extra time. We have been granted this time by Hashem to live. And you know, I think people say carpe diem, but don't really think about the fact that each day is granted to you as a free gift that you were not entitled to. And I think that's the key that was added. That's the note that was added to my memento mori experiences. I don't think my memento mori was associated to gratitude in the same way as it has now that I've filled out this chart and am seeing it every day when I daven. Okay, anyway, so I'm sure we'll have more to say on this. This is not the end of the story on memento mori and on the chart, but I just thought I would express these ideas while they are fresh in my mind. That is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweis, and my Zelle and PayPal are MattSchneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at RabbiSchneeweis@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening, thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.